All right, welcome to the live stream, everyone. I'm Kyle. Here with me is Dan Frio. And of course, where are our little usernames? Where are the tags that are we're supposed to have?
Nobody even know who I am.
I'm supposed to be prepared, and I'm not.
You followed me today, buddy.
So we're going to go through a Q&A here. Whether you're a first-time buyer, which probably a lot of people are joining here, or maybe this is your second or third time buying a house. You don't buy a house very often in your life, and you probably have a lot of questions, and that's what we're here for. We're going to answer your questions. So please ask them in the chat. We'd love to help you through this. Dan also has a YouTube channel. You can search his name, Dan Frio, or The Rate Update with Dan Frio, to be able to follow him there as well, unless you're watching on his channel right now. But let's see. We have in here Sandra. Hello from South Texas. Welcome. And also, I'd have to apologize at the top. I'm still like a little sick. So if I have a really nasty cough, I'm going to try to mute my mic. But otherwise, you may suffer through it. Vibing with Wit Coop. I hope I become at more ease with this live. That would be awesome. Tell us what you need to become more at ease, and we'll try our best. It's from Illinois. Dan is from Illinois as well, Chicago area. Woo-hoo! More specifically, you're in...
The office is in Naperville.
Naperville.
So we're losing... We can actually see a count of how many people we have on, and the count actually went down a decent amount. So those might... some people might come on here like right at 8 o'clock. What we do a lot of times is we start kind of, but then it starts, everything goes live about 3 or 4 minutes after that. So bear with us when you do come on.
Janet Santiago, all the best for 2023, everyone. Welcome. I'm going to make sure that the stream is fine too, that there's no issues there. No, we should be good. Ashley, welcome. Let's see. I'm just going to wait for some questions here, or we're just going to say welcome to everybody. Prathana, hello from Arkansas. I'm thinking of moving my family back to Savannah, Georgia area. Guyton area, I think is how you say that. Let's see. There we go. Here's the classic, that guy, Rye. Welcome. Hitting us hard with the housing market.
I'm just going to ask you this, Kyle, if you don't mind. When he pops on, bring his questions up, because he's on here every week with us. So we can't thank you enough, dude, for being on here every week.
Definitely appreciate the nice support. It's always nice too to see like somebody regular coming in with with comments, and then you feel like, oh, okay, like it's nice that there's like some support here. Let's see. Claire Bear said hello from expensive ass New York City.
I did. We had a couple consultations, one or two today, and between that and Southern California, the prices of some of these properties are insane.
Yeah. It's brutal, and we talked about that a little bit last stream too, where it's like you see a lot of the information about housing is a lot of these national numbers, but there are a lot of people buying in those areas, but there's also people buying a lot of areas that aren't these like explosive, super high cost of living areas. Let's answer this question really quick, but I also see Dominic, Meg,
Kokib, starting now,
Dan, Taisha, welcome. Hey, bros, been wondering about market cycles all week. Can you talk about this? Did we just start a new cycle? How many cycles have we had since the 2008 crash? How did last cycle compare to 2008? I'm curious, is he mentioning more like seasonality cycles, or is there a bigger cycle that you're seeing?
I'm not sure, but I can address briefly the 2008 thing. And that's what a lot of older, I won't say older people, but a lot of... people that are, I'll say, seasoned, they reference 2008 a lot. And because it was, the markets crashed, the housing market crashed and everything else. But what you have to be basically the premise of all that is, you know, just because it didn't happen just because houses appreciated, you know, robustly in those times like we've had recently. What mainly caused that crash, and you can go back in history and check this out, many banks failed, many countries failed, Greece almost failed, because a lot of these countries were buying up mortgage-backed securities that are from the U.S., that were just junk. So let me just explain it real quick how it worked back then. So subprime mortgages got graded, or all mortgages basically get graded and sold off as bonds, okay? So what happened back in 2000, basically it started in around 2000, is more and more people got into adjustable rate subprime mortgages, okay? So what happened was Moody's and a lot of these rating agencies, they would stamp these mortgage bonds and say they were AAA bonds. They were great credit risks and everything else. So pension plans, IRA plans, you might have some mortgage-backed securities in your portfolio. A lot of countries were buying our mortgage-backed securities because it was high yield, and they were supposed to be, as they were stated, they were stamped by Moody's. It's AAA credit. So they were fantastic credit. But then all of a sudden, the subprime mortgages started going bad. And the biggest thing behind that was adjustable rate mortgages that were on teaser rates, that were on stated income loans, and they were just bad underwriting standards. So what happened is with these people, they would get loans and they would be adjustable rate mortgages that would adjust in 2 or 3 years. So the first time rates adjusted, you know, people would get a payment shock. But then all of a sudden, more and more of these loans would start to adjust. Well, what would happen is the borrowers, their payments would go, you know, their rate would go from this crazy low teaser rate up to a normal rate that was probably in the tune of about double what the rate was that they started with. So because of that, their mortgage payments doubled. Okay. So they were an adjustable rate mortgage, nothing they could do. During that time, though, everybody was financing, refinancing, and financing and refinancing, and everybody was basically maxed out on their values. So most loans would be at 100% loan to value, meaning you finance 100% of your house. So when these payments went and they started doubling, what happened was people were like, I can't afford this. Well, I got to sell. So people started to sell. Well, you had millions and millions and millions of people that were in this situation, and they all decided, we can't afford this, we gotta sell. So they were forced, and I'll quote, forced to sell because they couldn't afford the payments, okay? That's what happened. So during that time, the mortgage industry and the government and everything else basically tried to correct these scenarios and really tighten down on mortgage underwriting. So what happens is now mostly almost everybody out there has a fixed rate. You can't go 100% financing anymore. You can go, you know, the best programs out there are 3% down. Plus what we've seen over the last year or two is house prices have really gone up. So people aren't forced, and I'll say it again, forced to sell because their mortgage payment, you know, remember the past, their mortgage payment doubled. They couldn't afford it. Well, now people can still afford it, but they might just want to move. Okay. So there's a big difference from having to sell your property to wanting to sell your property.
And not to mention, like, how globally people were bought into these mortgages that were.
Oh, yeah, everywhere. Like, you know, Greece as a country almost went belly up.
Yeah, these mortgages that were kind of like fraudulently put together and then sold to investors. As that whole thing collapses and implodes on itself, especially because a lot of these loans, people just stated what income they made. They said, sure, I make $100,000. And then, you know, like Dan mentioned, when those payments go up, those people didn't actually make the amount of money to be able to pay back that loan. But what ends up happening is when the whole economy starts to tank, people lose their jobs, they lose their savings. And then that is where you get into the position where it's, okay, now I need to get out of this really expensive monthly payment because my job, you know, either lost income, I lost savings, I lost my job. But I can't get out of it now without having to bring money to the closing table. So it's a whole mess.
So that's what happened. So what I try to educate people on is we're not in 2008. Will house prices go down? They might. Will they go down everywhere? No. Are they going to crash? Shouldn't. But we just don't know. But my whole point here is I want to educate those on, you know, well, 2008 again. Well, it's not 2008. If you educate yourself, you'll be the one in the crowd saying, oh, you know what? It really happened in 2008? You'll be able to explain it. So that's it.
Taisha, Alicia, hello from North Carolina. thank you for joining us. Tan, happy new year, everyone. Hope you feel better. Thank you. I'm definitely feeling better, but still got something going on. We're about to start our search in a couple months here. Should we wait until we file our taxes for last year before getting the pre-approval? You don't have to. It really is, unfortunately, everything in the mortgage world kind of is this like annoying, well, it depends. If you can qualify without needing those updated tax returns, then I would just move forward with that. Depending on how long your search takes, if it takes, you know, maybe another 2 or 3 months, an underwriter may want to see your updated tax returns. But ultimately, if you can get pre-approved with what you have now, that's going to be probably the easiest solution for you. However, if you're in that spot where I think a lot of people may be, where they're like, hey, I made more money this year. Some people are the opposite. They're like, hey, I made less money this year. If you're in that spot where you're like, hey, I made more money this year, then waiting to file your taxes if you need it to help you qualify for a mortgage could be a strategy. But if you can get approved now, I personally think that's the best bet. Then you have an approval in hand. You can always wait it out if you want to. But I think a lot of people over prepare themselves for the mortgage process and can qualify way earlier than they initially anticipate.
That can I chime in 1 second? Yep. So on that, if you have your own business and you made much more income, then you might want to wait, okay? But I'm going to wheel on what Kyle was saying, though, is if you're just W-2'd, you have a salary job and so forth, what we are going to use anyways is your last pay stub from 2022. It's going to reflect the same numbers as you show on your W-2. So there's really no need to wait unless you own your own business and you really need that income. You know, it might be more than you made last year and the year before. So you really need that extra income. But if you're salaried, there's no need to wait.
Kogib Bura, I think. I have got a lot of information so far. Thank you for what you're doing. You are welcome. Thank you for watching.
Thanks for being here.
Cato Kane on new construction. What determines how much a rate can be bought down? There isn't something that really determines how much a rate can be bought down. Am I reading that? Or maybe they're asking what the limits are or what the maximum is to buy it down?
Well, what I see a lot of times in this, Kyle, I think we've seen this on some loan estimates, and we don't even know how it's happening, is, you know, somebody will get approved, somebody will send us a loan estimate, and in there it's like, okay, the rate is 6.5% and you're paying 4 points. You can't pay 4 points. It's basically, it'll never close because you don't pass government regulations paying that much money. So some of the times when a loan estimate gets issued, it doesn't make a lot of sense to us, and because you can never close on that loan based on what it is. So you can buy down the rate up to about 2 points, and that's about it, depending on other lender or other costs that your lender is giving you.
Yeah, because there's a thing called a high price mortgage loan. Basically, the government has regulations after 2008 to say how many points a lender can charge you, and the main reason why this is there is primarily in those instances, like Dan was mentioning, where a lender goes and they charge 4 points. Well, 4 points on a $200,000 home or $200,000 loan is $8,000. That's $8,000 and effectively in prepaid interest that you don't have to pay. All that's doing is it's kind of artificially lowering your monthly payment. And then there's a break-even period. So you paid $8,000 up front for a certain amount of monthly savings and interest, and you have to hit that break-even period for it to make sense. The more that you pay up front, the longer that break-even period is. And a lot of people kind of lose their shirt on it because they didn't need to pay that much money. There was an opportunity to refinance to a lower rate before that time went over. So we've been seeing that in loan estimates. We also just saw a loan estimate that came in from somebody where they didn't even properly disclose FHA mortgage insurance. I don't even know how that's like...
nuts.
I don't even know how that's like like legal. Like there's like a regulatory issue there. We do a service where in the description it says let us beat your loan estimate. You can upload a quote or a loan estimate you got. We'll take a look at it and see if we can offer something better. But every once in a while we see these quotes from other lenders where we're like, the math does not, like, you can literally on that one, like line by line, this plus this plus this should equal this, and it did not. It was like for some reason $10,000 lower. Like basic math is not
it was wrong too. Remember the payment? it was an FHA loan and they didn't have the FHA mortgage insurance piece, yeah. which would have been about $250. So yeah. the payment, their end payment would have been $250 more than what the lender disclosed to them, which is
or a $500,000 home with an estimate of $60 a month in homeowners insurance. So a lot of times lenders do these things where they, I don't necessarily want to say it's like manipulative or that it's done on purpose because I don't know that to be true, but it certainly looks that way where it's no one's getting $60 a month homeowners insurance on a $500,000 house. But they'll use that lender because they think the cost is lower, but the lender doesn't give homeowners insurance. They just have to estimate it. And a lot of lenders will, not a lot, some lenders will artificially underestimate things so that their deal seems better. But in reality, you're going to get insurance to come through another company. It's kind of unfortunate to see that stuff happen.
We should do another loan estimate live event so people can really kind of dive in to see where that is. Plus, what we also have to do another event on is how we shop the whole country on the borrower's behalf to find out where the best rate at is out there in the country.
I agree. Meg C, that guy right, stop paying us money. You did a super chat. We appreciate your support, but you certainly don't have to give us a super chat. How does time at a job impact the mortgage process? You'll graduate in May and you're wanting to buy a home. So the really nice thing about being in college, or even if you're working in like a trade school or going to a trade school, is that that will count as your kind of employment history for buying a house. So let's say you're going to get a job as a nurse. And for some reason, the only two examples I can always think of are nurse and graphic design, but there's plenty more. Let's say you're a nurse and you're in school for nursing right now, and then you get a job. Well, your school counts as your employment history. Because what lenders want to see is they want to see not necessarily the history of the work. They just want to see, will you stay in this job for a certain length of time? What's the probability that you're going to continue being employed with a stable income? And so that's why they look at the history. So often for people, even if it's a new line of work, if you have a new certification, that can count to help you qualify for a mortgage with your new employment. So being in school, perfectly fine. You do not have to be on the job for 2 years. Likely what will happen is the underwriter will ask for your transcripts just to see, okay, did you actually get something in the same line of work? If you got a math degree and then you're going into work as a cop or something, then that won't work. What they'll then want to do is see, okay, what certifications do you have to be a police officer? Then they can use that to help show stability in this new job.
Perfect.
Dennis, welcome. Raj the MLO, or is it Rog? Please tell me how to pronounce your name. Cassandra C. Jordan Dina, welcome. We're going to get to your questions here in just a second. We got Dobie from Detroit. Dominic.
You got an application. I might have spoke with Dobie today. I talked to one or two people in Detroit today looking to buy a house. So
I know it's hard when people's usernames are not their real names. So they'll be like, oh, I emailed you. And they're like, your name does not match. Dominic, good seeing you again. Please check your email. Sweet. I will check my email after this live stream. Alexander Lester, 14 days until I close. Still super nervous. We're just waiting for the appraisal to be done today. Report is due on the 6th. Cool. Any advice to calm the nerves? Really, what I think in those situations, what's often helpful is to just touch base with your loan officer and your real estate agent. Because you can always touch base with them and say like, hey, I'm still kind of like things feel nervous and up in the air. And everyone has, you know, different responses for what makes them feel better. Some people really like to know, like, here's all the things that could go wrong and here's the plan ahead of time. Some people just like to know everything is good for now. And so I think it's going to depend on what you personally want. But I know in those instances, whenever I've felt like, even when I was buying a house and, I was also nervous too about when an appraisal was going to come in, and I just called, my loan officer and was like, hey, can you just like give me an update on what's going on? And then it's always nice to hear updated information, even if there's nothing new. That's what I would suggest. Do you have any tips in there?
Relax. You're probably going to be fine. Unless you think that the house value, what you're paying for it, is way over what it's going to come appraised for, I would relax. As long as I would check with your lender or your loan officer, just make sure your income has been signed off on and cleared and your assets have been signed off and cleared. And then just, you know, wait for the appraisal. And if the appraisal comes back, let's say it comes in a couple grand low, it's an easy fix. You either go back and negotiate with the seller, or you split the difference, or if you love the house that much, you just pay the extra. So don't lose any sleep over it. If you want to find, you want to see the most, the person that worries the most in the whole world, it's yours truly right here. So I'm telling you to relax, because as long as your income's cleared, your assets are cleared, your appraisal should be fine. 99.9% of the appraisals come in right what your purchase contract reads. Yeah, so I wouldn't be concerned. Happens, don't lose any
Drew, who is our underwriter here in the chat, said, "School for math, job as a cop. Bullet trajectory equals math." Well, you heard it here from an underwriter.
Okay. So next one we get, is that we're going to find out where he underwrites. We're going to send the loan there in case we get it turned down. But
Yeah, the great man. Comment. I wish underwriters thought that way. That'd be really nice.
Seriously.
I guess that's why we're not allowed to talk with underwriters, is it? Or not talk with them, but...
I do. I mean, I talk to them all the time. Unfortunately. Usually, it's not a good conversation.
Edson, so annoying. Yeah, and we're back. Wow. Now, okay, you're back. Welcome. Awesome. I had to turn the quality down, and so we should be good now. I don't know how to alert everybody on the other who is watching the other one how to get back here. Okay. Well, we have people back online. Thank you for joining us again. I'm so sorry. I have no clue what happened. It's always frustrating when there's internet problems, but we'll push through and I will promise to not be super mad. So please you will have to retype your question, unfortunately, but now it's going to move to the front of the line. That's a plus. There's always a bright side.
If we get another lag, we'll just fix it next time.
Yeah. What's weird too is with Restream, I can't go back in. Normally on a regular, if you just stream to one channel, I can join the previous one. And for some reason with Restream, it wouldn't let me go back and join the previous live one, which is what I was trying to do. All right. Much better. Back. Welcome. Yes, please retype your question and let's get back into it. I'm so sorry. I'll figure out how to make that work next time. Drew, we did talk about your math, your underwriter math, about how math plus cop equals bullet trajectory thing. And we were saying we would love to find an underwriter like you to work with. If that's the math that you're going to use.
Seriously, you get all the loans. People are starting to drive back in. Sorry about that, folks.
Dylan Wright said,
I'm not in the control panel.
Don't blame Dan. This is me. Can you in any way lower rate? I have a 720, but I can't afford the home at 6%. There's a couple strategies you can use. The two most common would be you have a temporary buy down and a permanent buy down. A temporary buy down is what you've heard a lot of people talking about with a 2-1 buy down. And this both are where the seller is going to give you a credit to help you pay this down. Actually, that's not true. You can also pay for it yourself, but most common is the seller is going to pay for it. With a 2-1 buy down, what would happen is your interest rate would effectively be 2% lower in the first year, 1% lower in the second year, and then the normal rate in the third year. So if you're at a 6, that means year 1, you'd have a 4% interest rate. Year 2, you'd have a 5% interest rate. Year 3, you'd have a 6% interest rate. So the 6 doesn't go away forever. It's just a temporary thing, and the seller would fund that. I have a calculator that does all that math and shows you how to do it on my website, winthehouseyoudlove.com. Another one is a permanent buy down, and this is where you would pay what are called points. Think of it like prepaid interest up front to help lower your monthly payment. What I would then look at is, like you said, you can't afford the home at six. What might be more helpful is to look at what is going into that monthly payment, because it's not just the interest rate that's changing things. It's also your homeowner's insurance and taxes. And my first thought there is, you can obviously look at going with a permanent buy down. That's kind of expensive and probably not going to change things a ton. Like, if we're talking about like what actually moves the needle of helping you afford a house more, purchase price is where I would start. Like, with where you're at right, with where the market's at right now, is it an option to look at maybe something that's in a lower price range and then live in there for a little bit and move up to something bigger in the future? Another thing is, are there other areas that have lower taxes? Because I know, for instance, around here, you change your, you know, if you go 20 minutes north, you're having a $300 a month difference in your taxes for very similar quality of houses, just in different areas. So those would be probably the main strategies I would look at helping lower your payment.
Perfect. Ditto that. Unfortunately, rates are right now.
How can I win the house? Every once in a while, someone will ask me, like, as if my channel is like a...
Mr. Beast? Are you giving houses away, Kyle?
Yeah.
Mr. Beast?
No, I'm not giving houses away. Kind of the whole thought behind the name of the channel is, the more educated you are, the easier it is, you know, the more educated you are about how to buy a house and how to qualify for a loan and the best strategies, the easier it is for you to be able to, win the house that you love against all the other people who want to buy the same house. Cause you're bidding against other people. You're competing against other people for a similar house, or, you know, for that same house likely. And then also, I'm not a big fan of like the dream home thing. I think it's kind of, nobody buys their dream home. Everyone buys a house that they like at the moment, and then things change. Like, my preferences changed, like, even 6 months ago are different than what they are now. And so I think the idea of like a dream house just kind of sets you up for the wrong idea, where it's like Dill Wright was talking about, like, hey, I can't afford this house at 6% interest rate. Well, another strategy is, okay, maybe I need to reset expectations, because if the only thing I can buy right now that's in my budget is a lower price range, then eventually that's something I have to become comfortable with. And I can always buy that house and then use a move up strategy to purchase something bigger in the future if I want to. But when everyone talks about you have to buy this dream house, we all of a sudden feel like there's no compromise I can ever make. And I know with my life, there's tons of things that I want, and there's a million things that I compromise on because it's not realistic in the moment for me to want those things. And there are things I can always work towards by creating a plan. So now I think I'm just rambling, but this is a question for you, Dan. Blue Migo said, have you guys talked about today's numbers from Economic Calendar?
I don't. And so Blue Migo, if you watch my channel, what I'm trying to do, Kyle and I've been having a lot of discussions about this, and you know, my channel was more of an economics channel, and that wasn't really the intention of it, because most of the people that watch my channel, it was more like a watching CNBC in the morning to see what the markets are doing. I do watch the markets diligently all the time. So what I've kind of decided to do is it's between a Friday and a Monday. I'm going to kind of break down the markets, what they're doing, what the economic calendars look like. Like this week was a pretty active week. You had some JOLTS numbers today, which is job numbers. You have the unemployment numbers coming out this week. You have the FOMC, which is the Federal Reserve. They come out with some guidance today. And, you know, most of the time what I've found out is, if you're looking to buy your first house, you know, most of the people are looking 3-6 months out the road. The interest rate today doesn't matter, but I'll try to get back into more of the economic data for you guys, just to give you some trends and maybe specify more specific areas. So maybe I do something like twice a week to give you, you know, here's what's going on here and here's what's going on there. But I do follow the numbers really diligently, and I'm even thinking of doing a spinoff channel of basically, you know, the economics behind real estate or something like that. But great question. I appreciate you. You probably found us from my channel. I greatly appreciate it if that's how you found us. But you know, the whole goal of what we're trying to do here is just, it's an educational tool. You just educate people, especially the millennials, when they're looking to buy their first house. And that's the whole point of my channel. And that's what I've always wanted to create. And I kind of went down a rabbit hole for a while, but I'm trying to revamp my channel. Hopefully that answers your question. But yeah, I know the economics behind things, and I'll try to start posting at least once a week to give you guys more content on that. But it's not going to be on a daily basis like I was doing.
Audio need up or down?
Sweet. Drew said he's definitely underwrote loans from your company on the correspondent side. Interesting. Using some of that trajectory math. Princess Lopez, you asked, is there any way I could set up a consultation with one of you? I'm looking to improve my credit in order to purchase a house. I'm at 5.8 at the moment. I've already applied on the site. Yep. So the consultations right now are primarily with Dan. So yeah, winthehouseyoulove.com. And I can double check that it's with Dan. I don't know your real name though, or what you signed up with, unless it is Princess Lopez on there. I'll double check. Vibin' with Coop. I recently started being an owner operator in the trucking industry. I started December 1st. I have W-2s from previous jobs that I've worked for 15 years. My credit score is 680. Okay. Is there more? Is there a question?
No, I think what the question is he was W-2'd. Now he's an owner operator. So he's going to be a sub 1099 or subcontract. That's really hard, honestly, especially in the trucking industry, because you have so much in expenses. That you really don't know, or we don't know, put it that way, how much money you're really going to make, because prior you were W-2'd. Now you're going to get paid per load, per delivery, per this. You're going to get 1099. You have all the expenses to pay, tolls, gas, everything else. So it's a huge difference from where you're coming from. Now, if you flipped it the other way, that's really simple. We just use your W-2'd wages. But the problem that you're going to face right now is you're probably most likely going to have to wait. This might be a one for Drew, but you're probably most likely going to have to wait for 2 years of tax returns to go with a standard mortgage. There are programs out there that can go off a cash flow or bank statements and things like that. But it's, again, you're going to have to do that for a while for that cash flow to really start, you know, showing up. So we at least have something to go off of.
Yeah, Drew just said trucking industry has so many ad backs, but you need 24 months for a good file, 12 months on the bestest file. Jordan, is it better to buy down your rate now and refinance later on? I'd be purchasing in the next 2-3 months, already pre-approved. So is it better to buy down your rate now or refinance later on? I'm always a little bit hesitant on buy downs. Primarily just because I haven't seen them work out usually in a buyer's best interest. Usually what I've seen ends up happening is, and this too is because, you know, we just had, rates recently hit like crazy historical lows. So it's tough to say like what that's going to look like in the future, because nobody knows what rates will look like in the future. So it all is a little bit of a gamble on what's going to happen. But I think anything over 1 point, that break-even period starts to become pretty risky, where a lot of people usually will see a refinance opportunity before that break-even period ends. So that's kind of where I'm at, but I'm also not in the category of like, there are a lot of loan officers doing this, like, what do they call it? Like date the rate, marry the house kind of thing.
Date the rate.
And it's a little too like salesy for me. And I think it's also a wrong way to, I think it's wrong to just assume that there's always going to be an opportunity to refinance. It really is something that you kind of look at like it. No one knows what the future is going to look like. Statistically, we've seen these refinance opportunities usually open up within a 5-year period of time. But again, nobody knows. For the people who bought a house and have a 2.5-3.5% interest rate, they're not going to see a refinance opportunity for a long time, possibly never, unless the Fed gets back into quantitative easing. But for people who are buying who have bought at 6.5. They bought at 7, even 5.5. That's more predictable long-term with interest rates to see refinance opportunities in the future. So I wish there was a more clear answer I could give you on that. But anything over 1% for me starts to just feel like I don't know that this is the best use of that money. Paul, thoughts on townhomes as a long-term investment? Also, can you ever can PMI waived with less than 20% down on a traditional mortgage? To answer your second question, no, it can't be waived on a traditional mortgage. You can pay the PMI up front if you want to, which kind of in a similar way works with points, where there's a break-even period of when it makes sense to do so. Usually I haven't found it to be very advantageous for people. Thoughts on townhomes as a long-term investment? What are your thoughts on that, Dan?
I'll address the PMI thing real quick. You can, there's what's called lender paid PMI. So just be careful you don't go down this rabbit hole where somebody tells you, yeah, my loan doesn't have any PMI. Because what they've done is they've actually increased your rate to make the lender basically self-insure that loan. So it's called lender paid MI. So they increase your rate to offset that payment. So you're still gonna have it. Why I don't like that approach is because you're gonna have that higher rate forever. Your PMI will fall off eventually, but the more you put down closer to 20% and the more the house appreciates, the quicker you can get rid of PMI. FHA though, what you wanna be cognizant of that is FHA loans only require 3.5% down, but if you put 10% down or more, the PMI is only on there for 11 years. And I say only 11 years, that's still a long time. Thoughts on townhouses, is it a long-term investment? I'll just give you some feedback on the last few times that the housing market went into kind of some turmoil. The number one kind of property that really got affected were condos. Don't ask why, I don't know. But it's just that was the number one piece of the market that really got hammered. Townhouses were more in the realm of single family homes. They dropped in values similar to single family homes. So if I were to pick between a home, a townhouse, and a condo, you know, ultimately I'd always pick a single family home. But my next choice would be the townhouse before I go into a condo. So that's just giving you some history behind some of that.
Chase said, hi from Florida, first time home buyer here. In your experience, any downsides for physician loans versus other loans? Also, do you think builders would negotiate for their quick move-in spec homes? As far as physician loans, any downsides? I personally don't see any downsides as long as I've seen a lot of physicians loans marketed as ARMs. And so that may be something to consider is if you're comfortable with an ARM, usually there's fixed options. But it seems like a lot of companies that have physician loans tend to offer the ARM side first, usually because they're not the most like physician loans are great loans. They're just not super profitable. The reason they're great loans is because often banks want the full portfolio of the physician, where they're willing to use the loan as kind of like a loss leader. They're willing to not make money on the loan so that hopefully you'll work with them for, car loans or savings accounts or CDs or other things in an investment portfolio because you're a high earning person. So that's usually why they probably market them as ARMs is because they're not as profitable. So that's the only thing I would see as like maybe a downside is just making sure you go with a fixed unless you're really comfortable with an ARM. Do you want to take that second one? Do you think builders would negotiate prices for their quick move-in or spec homes?
I maybe. It depends on your market. And a lot of this stuff is really market-driven. And what I mean by that is, it's like, just go back to economics. If you ever had an economics class, it's basically supply-demand. you know, if the builder has a lot of supplies and less demand, they want to dump these properties, because you got to think they're sitting on, you know, each one of those properties is $300,000-$500,000, and the builder has loans on these things too. So they have a loan on the whole project. So they have loans on every house, the streets, the land, the everything else. So they want to get rid of these things, but they're also prudent and they're very shrewd business people. So supply demand is the thing. So if there's really, you know, you have robust supply and not much demand, yeah, they'll wheel and deal all day long. If you're in areas that's really, you know, booming, they're gonna find a buyer for that house. I can promise you that. So it doesn't hurt to try, but don't be surprised if they come back and say, you know, I wouldn't go in with $100,000 less, you know, bid, because they're probably gonna say no. But try. You have nothing, you know, nothing to lose and everything to gain if they say yeah.
Will conventional loans ever offer assistance with closing costs or down payments, or is that only found with government loans? You can get down payment assistance on conventional loans. That's usually more for like local community programs that will offer that. And then as far as closing costs, on conventional loans, you can still ask for a seller credit. Depending on your down payment, it's usually around 3%, but it can go up to 9% actually on a conventional loan, and that can help a lot with your closing costs. Tracy, hey, Dan and Kyle. Dan, thank you for the consult. I spoke with Jeff from NCC today, which is a credit repair, credit coach agency. I think I'll be on track in no time. That's awesome. Zachary, is there a credit score threshold that once you meet, you couldn't get a lower rate? Yes, 740 is the top of the charts in the mortgage world, and unfortunately you don't get bonus points for being higher. True's coming in more with his math trajectory theory.
Oh. I love it though, and he's here every week.
I do love it. Sabrina, hi, what would I need for a USDA loan 502 direct? I'm self-employed. So 502 direct is given directly through, hence the name direct, directly through USDA. So no other lender can offer a USDA loan. Whereas most lenders offer a USDA guaranteed loan, which is a fantastic option. USDA direct is primarily for, they classify it as moderate to low income. And I'm not familiar with, USDA direct guidelines, just because we're not able to offer them. Are you familiar with the direct program that much?
No, we do offer USDA loans. So if you want to compare, you know, what they're offering you to what we might be able to offer you, you know, all you need to do is schedule a consultation. And if it's in the next week or so, it's probably going to be with me. So I'd love to hear, you know, what they're offering you and any benefits. So what we could just do is line them up. You know, here's what they're offering you. Here's what we can offer you. Is there any real differences there? And if there isn't, you know, just let us handle the whole thing for you if you want.
Sandra, I'm finalizing divorce. Score good after about 775, but how long before credit updates? What legal docs would be needed for the loan? Primarily for the loan, what we would need to see would be the separation agreement or the divorce decree, just showing basically what's happening to divide it between any assets. You know, do you currently own a home? What's happening with the home? Also, what's happening with any debts, if that hasn't been updated on the credit report already. But we don't need a full credit update on that loan, like showing disbursement of different debts or who owns what debts. The divorce decree or separation agreement will override those things. Anything else you can spot in here that would be helpful?
The other thing, the financial piece of that equation, like, are you going to receive, you know, monies, alimony, child support, or whatever? Because it gets a little tricky, and Drew can probably jump in on this one. Once you divorced, you might be deemed, you know, you're getting X amount per month. But we really need to validate that. Because, you know, there's a lot of deadbeat people out there that don't pay the child support or alimonies or so forth. So we have to validate that you're, in fact, getting that money. The one piece of this that I would like to address, and I know you didn't put it in the question, is if you currently own a house that you're on the loan with, please work to have your ex or soon to be ex diligently work to get you off of that loan, because you, in the divorce decree, it might say, well, you're not liable for anything, but legally you signed the mortgage note. So you are in fact legally liable for that payment as well. Okay. So just food for thought.
Cassandra said, how does payment shock occur if someone has already been pre-approved? My friend recently went through this. Payment shock is basically whatever your current housing payment is. So that for most people, when they're buying the first home, it's rent. So let's say your rent's $1,000 a month and you're looking at a mortgage that's $1,200 per month. So that's a payment shock of 20%. So it's, you know, 20% above what you were paying. Payment shock is only really considered for a few select loans or manually underwritten loans. And it's not going to be an issue after the pre-approval unless your loan officer didn't do the work they were supposed to do. This is something that if it was an issue would have been caught, and they wouldn't have issued a pre-approval unless they addressed the payment shock. So it's not something that should happen later in the process. It's something that should be caught upfront, unless I'm missing something here.
I haven't had somebody get denied on payment shock for years and years and years and years. And usually it's an FHA manual underwrite. So that means your credit scores were under 580. You didn't get approved through an automated system. So they have to manually look at your criteria. And basically it's like, you know, you have to meet these specific guidelines to a T. And if you don't,
That'd be like scraping through if there wasn't any other compensating factors either.
Yeah. That'd be like, and there's, the last time I looked, there was like, you need to meet 2 of 7 compensating factors or something of that sort. So it's, sometimes it's kind of difficult, but it's not impossible to do. I've done hundreds of them. But that's the last time I ever heard you got denied for your payment shock. That's why, I don't know if you guys saw me go like this. I haven't seen anybody denied on that for years and years and years. So, yeah. You know, reach out to us if you'd like. And that's why you're here. So we also are mortgage. So if we could help you with that, at least dissect it, or, you know, try to explain some things to you, that's what we would love to do that.
I was laughing at Drew's comment. He said, LO Drew says, don't mention it and ram that purchase before it's known. Underwriter Drew says, you need decree and all supporting documents. Yeah. So there's 2 sides of Drew is what we're learning. There's underwriter, and then when he comes in the chat, he is not an underwriter. Oh, man. Dill Wright said, I appreciate it. I have 4 children, and we are 1-income family, so home size needs versus this market is just crazy right now. Not far from Dayton either. Thank you. Yes, totally get it. And this is, I'm very curious in which what city you're looking to buy in. Don't dox yourself on here, but this whole section of little cities around Dayton are very interesting, because you can have some areas are really competitive south, and then you go north and they're still competitive but not as competitive, and you can get something like a USDA loan if you're needing to save money up front. And things like USDA and FHA are going to have lower rates than a conventional loan. So if you'd like, we can take a look and help you strategize that a little bit. Steven said, is there a loan type you can use for new construction home as an owner builder? And what would be the process? So you would be building the house. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's what I would say. That those are. I'll just address this real quick. There are programs out there that are a one-time close. I would really be hesitant. Make sure the company, the loan officer you're working with, really knows that product and deals with it. Exclusively. We have the availability to do those programs. We don't. And it's basically because what's a polite way to put this? It's really hard. Just building a house in general is hard. But just to answer your question, what I would do is I would go to a local bank, because most of the time your local banks, that's what they're there for. They love this stuff because they want to lend in their areas so that you can work great deals with them. If you're a member of a credit union, go there. That's probably your best route to do that if you're doing all this on your own. And then if nothing else fails, you know, we'd be more than happy to try to help you guide through this process. But I would go to a local credit union if you have it, or a local bank, see what they are offering you. And then once you're done, you only need the construction piece. Then once you're done, you need what's called an end loan. And then any lender can do that. We can even help you with that. But the construction piece, especially when you're doing it on your own, that it's really tricky.
Yeah. Sandra, thanks for the super sticker. I don't see a question in here, but if you have one, feel free to put it in here and I'll answer that. Steven said, yes, he'd be the general contractor on the build. And it's the same thing too with like rehab loans. When you want to do the work, it becomes very difficult. I think 2 or 3Ks only allow 10% what they call sweat equity. Which I think is kind of a gross term. I don't know. Why do we have to call it sweat equity?
The 203K streamline will allow you to do it on your own, but it only gives you up to $30,000 to just do like TLC work. When you want to do additional work, now you need HUD contractors and HUD general contractors and all that. It gets really hard because you got to look at it on the lender side. You're putting some skin in the game. You're putting some money in, but the lender is giving you all this money to, you know, start bulldozing and start doing this. If you happen to back out or default, I mean, the lender might have a hole in the ground with some concrete and they're like, now what do we do? Because they're not in the market for, you know, to build houses and to sell houses. They're in the market to basically fund these things for you. So that's why there's a lot of reluctancy there in the lending field.
I talked with an account executive at a wholesale lender once, and he was explaining a story of how he was working with a loan officer and their client who, you know, they pay draws for construction. So they're not just going to give you $400,000 and say, all right, have fun. Like, they're going to give you like a little bit of money and then check and a little bit of money and check. And so I guess they didn't do the inspections as they were supposed to. And for the first couple draws, the contractor just would take money and like go buy a boat and go buy like ATVs. And they didn't really do their due diligence of making sure it was going towards the construction. And since then, they became a lot more strict on making sure they knew what was going on. Because once that happens, once money goes into a boat or something, it's kind of tough for that lender to get that money back. I've been at my current job for over 6 years. Will I have trouble getting approved if I'm moving to a new state and changing jobs, same field, within a couple months of wanting to purchase? No, you should be fine. As long as you're at a similar income, you're in the same field, there should not be any issue moving forward with that. The realist, Dan. Do you need your last 2 years tax returns to get pre-approved? I was going to wait until we filed ours this month since we made more.
So the question that is, the assumption is you're self-employed. That's why we need your tax returns. It depends on how long you've been in business. So for example, I won't go through the technicals with you, but there's, when we do loans, there's loans that get issued to Fannie Mae and loans that get issued to Freddie Mac. Freddie Mac is, if you've been in business for 5 years or more, many times Freddie Mac will approve your loan with 1 year of tax returns. So it depends on if you're self-employed or you work a W-2 jobs. So if you're just W-2'd, we don't have to wait for your tax returns, because basically your end of the year pay stub, like your December 31st of 2022, that's going to match your W-2 exactly. That you're going to file, you know, April this year. So we can use that in place of your W-2, and you're probably going to have your W-2 anyways. I think they have to be legally out by the end of this month anyways. Yeah. So you can get away with your W-2s if you're a salaried or, you know, wage worker. But if you're self-employed, that's when a lot of that other stuff comes into play. So hopefully that answers your question.
Spoke with Alan the other day about doing a refinance of my house that has a private investor holding the note. Looking forward to work with him. That's awesome. Alan is fantastic. Alan is on our team. And you can connect with, you know, Alan or Dan or any one of our other loan officers. Warehouselove.com.
It's all one big team. We're all here to help.
Alan is great. Said, thank you guys. I appreciate your help. We appreciate you being here. Jordan said, I know it's hard to predict, but do you think it's better to wait on interest rates to drop at some point or go ahead and pull the trigger at 6.3% conventional?
Let me just give you the analytics or what I'm expecting for this year. And I always like to say the whys. Okay. So the 6.3, I don't know if you got a quote from us. You might want to get a quote from us because we're going to scan your loan with 85 of the country's largest lenders to make sure you're getting the best rate. So that's how we compare it. And Kyle has a loan estimate calculator on his website. We have it on our website as well. So you'd be more than welcome to send that in. But what happens is, and I'll say this as quick as I can. A recent study came out by CNBC that 98% of CEOs are predicting a recession in 2023. Well, you got to remember, CEOs, they basically run these companies. So thus, they run the country. If they're predicting a recession in 2023, it's probably going to be a self-fulfilled recession because they're the ones predicting it. The last five recessions that we've had, mortgage rates on average have dropped 1.8%. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to drop this time. But if you take history for what it's worth, that's where, you know, that's what's in the cards. I just came out with a kind of a prediction video, and I hate that word. I'll say forecast from here on. I don't know what's going to happen. My forecast for this year, though, is I expect rates to get back down to 5.5%. Maybe. They might not. I don't know. It's basically predetermined on what the Federal Reserve is going to do. Are we going to a recession? What is going to take place? So, I would check with us to see if there's a better rate out there for you. And if not, you know, rates should, based on all the economic data that we have right now, should be coming back down. But just so you know, rates peaked out in November at 7.375. Rates right now are in the mid, well, you see it, 6.3. You probably have 6.375. So rates are 1% lower than where we were just in November. So rates are coming back down. You know, how far they'll come down, I don't know. But we would love to give you a quote, at least scan our system to make sure that 6.3 is the lowest rate that you can get out there in the market.
Yeah. Yes, I do have a break-even calculator for buy downs. That can help you with that. Donald, I have two jobs. One I have 5 years and the other one I've had for a year and 3 months. On both, I'm doing the same title job. Can I have a pre-approval for both jobs? So to get qualified from the income from two jobs, you'll need to have a two-year history working both of those jobs. So it looks like you're 7 months away from being able to use both of those, both of that income. Now, if you can qualify based on your primary job, then that's something that we could do. But if it's split 50-50, then you're going to need to wait that 2 year period. Let's see, gross $185 per year, 2% debt to income. Okay, so you have no debt. 800 credit score problem. I live in California. It's crazy how how expensive California is. It makes me really curious. We're like, what is everyone doing? What are all these jobs that you all are getting that you're affording some of these multiple million-dollar houses?
It's crazy because I talked to a lot of people out there, and it's a unique state, I guess, as I'll put it there. Like today I talked to a guy who does a lot of artwork and video work for commercials. And he sells off like artwork or something like that to the maybe like Coca-Cola or whatever, and they pay him and contract with him yearly. So he'll get like, you know, $20,000 for this and $30,000 for that. It was pretty cool. But the tough thing, a lot of the income out there is gig work, you know, they're actors or whatever, or they're high tech. So it seems like there's two ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
You know, there's ones that make, you know, unfortunately, you know, the question you just had, $185,000 is a lot of money. But when your house, you know, the house you're looking to buy is $1.2 million, it's not a lot of money. you know, and that's unfortunate. So,
yeah. There's also a lot of wealth that has been gained from just home appreciation in those areas as well, which is why like a lot of people went from, you know, they sold in California and went to Texas, or Phoenix was where a lot of people went. And then everyone's like, how's everyone doing this? And it's, well, they made, they made several hundred thousand dollars by their home appreciating, in these higher cost markets. Are you starting to see sellers covering closing costs? Yes, we had somebody last week who was on here who mentioned, did they say 6% seller credit?
Yep. And I had a couple consultations today that the sellers are motivated. Yeah, they're like, you know, I can get probably, you know, but don't go crazy. You know, it's not the crash again. You know, you can't go in and say, oh, you know, I want $10,000 in closing costs and $100,000 off the house. You're not going to get it. But if you go back to the bar, you know, the client or the seller, you know, most of them are going to kick in easy $5,000, $6,000. That should cover almost all your closing costs.
Did we talk about FHA mortgage insurance?
Yeah. If you put down 10% or more, you have the PMI on FHA for 11 years. Now, if you either put 10% down or more and you have it for 11 years, or if you don't put down 10%, you're going to have it for the whole duration of time that mortgage, for all 30 years, unless you refinance.
David, I'm a new loan officer in LA. Is that Louisiana or LA, I guess, is the real question. Could I still manage success working fully remote at home with no daily office environment? Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I work remote. Dan, you go in the office.
Yeah, I'm still old school, and I have employees, and I run the office. So a lot of people, you know, get a hold of me to troubleshoot, figure out this. I review all the corporate tax returns for clients at that. I do a lot of consultations. So I like being in the action. If you're diligent enough, like Kyle works out of his house a lot of times. My son's an engineer, works out of his house and does great. You know, it's just, is that the kind of person you are? I probably couldn't. I'm self-motivated, but I like going somewhere to get in that environment. But by all means, yes, it's amazing how many people I talk to on a daily basis that are remote workers. I never thought that in my wildest dreams, how many people work remotely. But yeah, you can absolutely do it. Most of my loan officers are remote.
Yeah, with COVID, it's like how many, I would love to see the percentage of how many people work from home now.
Yeah. Well, it's like Nico. Nico, our office is in Naperville. Nico lives down by Wrigley Field. I mean, it's not that far in mileage. But it's a pain in the ass to drive. I mean, it takes you a long time because of traffic. You know, if you were to go to Chicago in the evenings, I can get there in 35 minutes. Yeah. If I went at 8 o'clock in the morning, it would take me 2.5 hours.
Or now when it snows, it's like that's the last thing I want to do is get in a cold car and drive somewhere. Eternity, Chris. Thank you for being here. I see you often. I think you're on almost every one of these live streams. If a house appraised by FHA loan, how long does the appraisal value stay with the house? If you have FHA, is this, let's answer the first question. 4 months, it's going to stick with a house. If you have FHA, is the same rate, even if you have a high credit score? No. So the rate does change with FHA based on your credit score. The higher credit score you have, the lower rate you'll get. The lower credit score, the higher rate you'll get. So it is risk-based in a very similar way that conventional loans are. It's just, it looks different on the back end, but effectively works the same. The only thing that is different about FHA in that sense is like on a conventional loan, a high credit score will get lower mortgage insurance. But on FHA, mortgage insurance is the same across the board, no matter what credit score you have. Which is kind of interesting thing about FHA, because even if you have a 800 credit score, you still have the 0.85% mortgage insurance premium on the loan amount with FHA loans. What's the best way to limit the credit impact of trying to shop around for rates? So this gets, I feel like people say the wrong information about this a lot, but the government body that oversees and regulates credit, the CFPB, says you have 45 days from your first inquiry to shop for a mortgage an unlimited amount of times, and it will only count as one inquiry. So if I started today and I got my credit pulled for a mortgage, I could, in the next week, go get it pulled 1,000 times, and it will only have the impact of one credit inquiry. Of course, those inquiries are still going to be in my report, but they won't affect my score. Only the first one will. One inquiry is going to impact your score by 0 to 5 points. It's not the end of the world. What ends up happening is on a lot of these credit reporting sites, like Credit Sesame and Karma and all the other ones, is they do this kind of fear tactic thing where you get your credit pulled and they're like, oh no, the world is falling apart. You should use our lender. They use kind of like fear to act like things are falling apart. That way you work with one of their servicers. An inquiry barely affects your score. You financially benefit from shopping your mortgage. So please do so. There is just the credit impact of it has been way overblown because these companies use it as a marketing tactic to get you to use one of their providers. Drew said, I worked at a place that had zero closing costs for buyers and refinanced for 3 years. When rates go low, lenders need a catch. Interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if a lot of the programs that start coming up with, maybe as the market turns around more in a buyer's favor, if there's more programs like that coming up from lenders. Because I think a lot of lenders are in that spot where, you know, they're already shedding employees. And so I don't know how much more a lot of kind of these bigger lenders can manage the hurt that they've been feeling. Many thanks. Appreciate you both. And shout out Team Javier. Javier is great. You guys are the oracles of all things home buying on YouTube. Well, I certainly wouldn't say oracles, but I can pull out my crystal ball again here if I need to.
I know they had to say that, didn't they? you had the screen filled up last week, or was it the week before?
See, that's why this
everywhere. Last week was the fire, wasn't it?
But I think it was
fireplace last week.
It was two before. Oh, I can't. I can't laugh. It makes me have to cough. Oh gosh, I think last year or last week was the crystal balls. That's why the stream was slowing down, Dan. We don't have enough. There's not.
I can't
magic.
Believe we had some people come back to us after we rebooted everything just about an hour ago. That was awesome. There was a ton of people. And then all of a sudden, boom, nobody.
Stream issues are the worst. They're the worst things in the world. Because you just have to sit there and be like, well, that sucked. Can't do anything about it. Let's see. Answered some of these. Since rates can change so quickly, even intraday, is there a way to somehow ensure that you can lock in the lowest rate possible during your shopping period without constantly asking the lender? Dan has the perfect answer for this.
No. Yeah. So here's what we do. And this is one of the reasons why I've been a broker for next week will be 34 years, buddy.
Wow.
Okay, just letting you know. Okay. But here's what happens is none of us know exactly what's going to go on with mortgage rates. And you're right. Rates can change daily throughout the day substantially. So I prefer being a broker. And here's why. If I worked at a bank, and I do work at a bank, but we are also a huge broker. Okay. So if I work at a bank and you come to me and I lock in your rate, it's kind of like I'm a stockbroker. You bought stock off of me. Well, the next day, if the stock price goes down, you can't call me up and say, Dan, I want that stock back. I want you to sell it and then buy it back for me at that lower price. It doesn't work that way. So that's what happens if you're at the bank. But if we're a broker, here's what happens. We lock you in. Okay. It's with that specific lender that we're set up with. However, I have 86 other lenders that we can deal with. All right, so we have your whole mortgage package. It's already put together. We already have a pre-approval from Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac on it. So now I can take and shop your loan around. So what we do is rates usually don't move as volatile as they have been recently. So we'll lock you in. And then if rates plummet, I'll go back to that lender and try to work or negotiate, bringing down that rate. And where it comes into play is I can just say, well, then just pull it. Just withdraw it. and I'm going to send it off to another lender because I have this whole arsenal of lenders behind me that I can place loans with. So I really don't, I kind of care, but I really don't care if they tell me no. That just means they're not going to get that loan. I'm just going to move it and take it somewhere else. So that's what the benefit of us is. We're a bank and we're a huge brokerage that we can do all this for you because our goal is to get you the lowest rate that there is possibly out in the home market. And that's our goal here is to educate you guys and also be your one-stop shop that we can do all your shopping for you. And if rates continue to drop, we'll be calling you saying, hey, rates just plummeted. We're going to move your file over. You're going to get a whole new set of disclosures, but it's good news for you because you're going to save a bunch of money.
Yeah. And unfortunately, with a lot of those like float down options, what ends up happening is you have these companies where, let's say you would be able to get a 6% interest rate. Well, through the company that might offer a float down option, they're going to give you a 7% interest rate. So since their loans already have a bit of padding on them, when rates do drop, they can say, oh, we're going to float down your rate. But they already applied the padding to begin with. They just removed it. And so what we do is we actually provide as the smallest amount, the smallest rate possible, because legally we can't add any padding. Like as a broker, we can't fit in extra money into it. So we have to give you the best rate possible. It just so happens that when rates do go down and they go down substantially enough that it's worth it, we can just go to another lender. Like Dan mentioned, you know, out of the 80 plus lenders that we work with to say, okay, if it's not going to work with this lender, we'll just go to the other one with market pricing instead of the one that was locked in.
Great question.
Sandra said, follow up, no kids, no alimony, home already sold. Pretty straightforward. I was worried about credit part. Y'all rule. Thanks so much. Cool. So there's not going to be a ton of friction in there, it sounds like, which is going to be great.
The divorces turn into a mess a lot of times when the people don't take care of the current home. And that's a whole nother animal.
Cassandra said, thanks for clearing that up. It was a friend who this happened to. It didn't make sense for payment shock to occur after the pre-approval. Yeah, that is very unfortunate. It definitely should not have happened. Let's see. Opinion on the Shinoah Fund. Dan, do you have any opinions on that?
Shinoah is that down payment assistance program. It is very good. It's one of the ones out there that we used to use. Lately, for the past 3, 4, 5 months, there hasn't been a lot of people asking for down payment assistance. There's been, Kyle just did a video, I think the other day, was, you know, how many people are doing cash buying, FHA loans and so forth. But Shinoah, that is a very good program. There are some others out there, but that is one of the top programs out there.
Do you have any, what are your top three new construction builders? Do you have any that stand out from the top of your head? Honestly, anytime I've done new construction loan, I'm never like, oh, this was such and such builder. It's usually like not our department, because normally the realtor is handling any conflicts or communication with builders like that. But any that stand from the top of your head?
Nah, I mean, all the builders. Here's what I would suggest based on, you know, a lot of last year and the year before, so many people building. Just be careful of the contracts that you sign. Have somebody, a legal representation, review those contracts with you so that the contract isn't completely skewed to the builder's side. Meaning, you know, if our prices go up, we pass it on to you. If it takes us 3 years to build the house, too bad. That's what it's worth. You know, just put some guidelines in there that basically puts their feet to the fire a little bit. So, you know, they can't gouge you and they can't just take forever to complete your house.
A builder bought a property to build two units, tore down the existing structure, half built the first house, and seems to have run out of money. Would it be possible to get a mortgage to buy this property? Oof, that is going to be an interesting one. I think, Dan, your answer earlier about looking at a local bank or credit union is probably going to be your best option here. Primarily because their local banks and credit unions are going to be more comfortable with these kind of risky types of loans. And they usually can offer some more like creative solutions in that case. But that's a very tough situation, I think, to be able to get financing for. Because I know my question would be, if I was like a local bank in this situation, is, okay, now we have to kind of pick up the pieces and make sure like work was done correctly. If things are actually half built, is there damage to the home? Like, is there things that were exposed or in the process? Like, there's so many questions and so much risk that could happen in this situation. That I do think it's going to be difficult to get a loan for.
I would agree on that one.
D-Tank Plus, if you are self-employed and get a W-2, why do you still need 2 years of tax returns from the business? The main reason why is, you know, let's say that most people in this instance, you know, it sounds like you have an S-Corp or maybe a corporation of some sorts, is you still own the risk of that business. When you're separated from the business and you don't actually own the business, if that business takes a loss, like if I work at like Walmart and Walmart takes a loss, that doesn't impact me. I still get paid my salary and I get to move on. But when you're self-employed, you're not just getting a W-2. You're also absorbing the profit and the potential loss from the business as well. And so the underwriter needs to look at your business's stability. Now, in here, though, you're bringing up a good point that I agree with, that there's this assumption that if you have a W-2, in the mortgage world, underwriters, you know, the guidelines just act like everything's fine and you can depend on that income for the foreseeable future, when we know that's not true. W-2 income is looked at as the most stable in the mortgage world. Probably, non-taxable income is probably more stable than that. But why? I don't know. There's just an assumption that if it's not your business, it will continue.
I had a friend of mine that asked the same question. He refused to give me like the corporate returns and all this other stuff. And I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. It's how it works. You know, I need your last 2 years taxes because he's like, no, I'm W-2'd. I'm like, so, but who's the owner of the company? Me? I'm like, so basically you're self-employed. It's just kind of a shell game on how that money's gets represented.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be found out through the Secretary of State, through searches and everything, that you own the company. And when you own the company, you know, or if you're a partner of it and you own more than 50%, I think it's even maybe 25%, you have to provide the corporate tax returns. It just is what it is. When they come up, you're shown as the owner. And then that's when it'll get unraveled at some point. We just try to be as transparent with you guys up front as we can. And we know these, you know, a lot of times it is prudent that you let us know that you are the owner of that company, because what will happen is if you just say, oh, I'm W-2 and this and that, and we start this process down the road, and then when we find out you own it, everything's going to get unraveled. So, you know, please be upfront with everybody at the beginning so we know what we're getting into.
Mick, POV, I've been at the same job for 11 years and also own my own cleaning business for 6 years. Will they combine both incomes for approval? Yes, they will. And like Dan mentioned earlier, on a lot of Freddie Mac conventional loans, which we can see if you can qualify for. If you've been self-employed for the past 5 years, most of the time we can get an approval with just 1 year of tax returns, which makes things just a lot easier from, you know, documentation perspective to get that approval. Drew, thank you for helping out in here. You're like a rock star on this this comment section, just going through and answering everything. I appreciate it. Robin Willis, considering buying a new construction home, if I can't lock in the rate until closer to closing and the rate drops before closing, am I stuck at a higher rate? If you are not locked, your interest rate is going to float with the market. So if it goes down and then you lock it in, you get to take advantage of the lower rate. If it goes up and then you lock it in, you have the higher rate. So if you're not locked in yet, then your rate will be what it is closer to the closing date.
I like your smooth jazz.
Just ever so subtle. Why are mortgage rates coming down when the Fed keeps raising rates? The main thing that keeps interest rates high is not the Federal Reserve's interest rate changes, because that interest rate is the actual rate that banks pay to lend each other money. And so the main reason why this is happening is inflation, high inflation is what keeps mortgage interest rates high, because mortgages typically are 30-ish years. So inflation is like the number one enemy of mortgages for investors and banks. And so as the Fed increases the Fed funds rate, and that helps lower inflation, that's good news for mortgage rates. So when inflation comes down, mortgage rates start coming down as well. And so we've been seeing these Fed rate hikes start to not bring down inflation much, but below the expectations of where they would be. And that gives investors a good feeling that inflation is getting more under control, which provides lower interest rates. Dave M, 2% debt ratio, 185,000. Can't afford a house. Get out of there. Get out of California. I think what Dave was saying to somebody earlier. Yeah, that's that is a tough situation. Great question. Title insurance seems like a scam or a racket. What are your thoughts? Why doesn't the policy transfer? And how is this still an issue with digital record keeping? I will say, at least with a lot of counties in the U.S., digital record keeping is not as robust as you may think. There are still a lot of instances where title companies are still having to go to the recorder's office and actually dig through records to do a thorough search, because not everything is digitized.
I went to the DMV in Florida about 6 months ago. They had a typewriter. I asked the lady, I'm like, it was archaic. She's like, dude, we are in like the 80s. It was, they had some computers, but they had typewriters for a lot of things. I mean, it was, so when you're talking about the government, you think that, you know, they spend a lot on a lot of stuff, but they don't really spend a lot of money in like counties and some cities on their automation. Because even like I go down to Cook County every once in a while in Chicago. And yeah, it's archaic. I mean, it's just their computer systems are bad. Their phone systems are archaic. It's crazy. So yeah. I agree with you, but it's unfortunately it's just like insurance in general. And insurance in general is, I think I've had one claim on my house in 22 years. So yeah. It's just, but I'm gonna have to agree with you on that one.
Yeah, and as far as like a scam racket, with like the policy not transferring, it's kind of the same question as like, why doesn't the seller's home like insurance policy transfer to me? So I think thinking about that might be helpful as well, is because they are functioning as like separate insurance policies. And you don't need a title insurance policy unless you get a loan. If you're buying in cash, you don't need a title search. You don't need title insurance. I would definitely recommend getting it, because I've seen some terrible things even around here where people didn't have title insurance and they're losing out on like... There was one house that like a commercial development came in and then they lost out on a $2 million settlement because of it. So there's whole different things that can happen in there. But the lender is the one that gets the title insurance policy. And it's primarily because there's so much that can happen in between the time that the seller bought the property and then you bought the property, that there needs to be another title search to actually see what the record and the chain of title was, and to make sure there wasn't a mechanics lien put on there, an IRS lien, you know, whatever could happen to the title there, or even just a recording error that could find a title defect that both the title search and insurance would cover. I'm with you. It's annoying, and I would prefer that it doesn't exist. But unfortunately, that's where it's at. Do you have any insight you want to add there?
Nope. All good.
Can you talk about jumbo loans versus conforming loans? I feel those loans are common in California. You want to take that? Because I feel like I've talked a little bit.
This portion of California has what's called a high loan balance or high loan. So in, you know, most of the country, let's say the loan limits, I think it's $1 million now, but let's say, you know, California might have $1.5 million in loan limits. Usually, when you're going from a conforming loan, you need 620 credit score to qualify, and you need, you know, 3% down in many cases if you're a first-time home buyer. When you go to jumbo, in most cases you have to have a higher credit score. You're probably going to need more money down, Those are the two biggest factors, and the debt ratio comes down. But usually you're making that much more money that, you know, the debt ratio is not usually an issue on jumbo loans. But, you know, the rates are a little bit different. The guidelines, it is a completely different animal. But it is, there's really not that much of a difference other than, you know, the rate's a little bit different. The credit scores are different. It usually starts at like a 680 or maybe a 7 or 720 credit score versus a 620. So there can be major differences, but all in all, there's not huge differences there. I know I kind of contradicted myself, but when you underwrite it, you're still underwriting. You need the income, you need the assets, you need all this other stuff. But the qualifications to get there is basically a higher credit score and usually a higher down payment if you're looking to buy into one of those homes.
Dan, do you have any horror stories for new construction homes?
Oh my God. Here's the worst one is we had a gentleman last year that was, we were basically cleared to close. And we started reaching out to his builder 30 days. Well, we were in contact with them the whole time, but for 30 days, we were wanting the final water certs, the occupancy permits and all this other stuff. Well, we're not getting it. And every couple days we're reaching out, hey guys, we need this. We need this to get the clear to close, to issue our closing disclosures and all this other stuff. Well, on a Friday night, about 6 o'clock my time, we get the building, the occupancy permit and all this stuff that we need. But in the clause, they said, well, the loan has to close on Monday or we're going to pull the contract from the buyer. Well, the house appraised for $100,000 more than the person was buying it for. The builder knew that. So they really didn't even give us time to close. Because I technically, legally have to send out what's called a closing disclosure at that point. Then we have to wait 3 days to close. Well, they knew that. But they knew the house value was $100,000 more. So it was just a way for them to just kind of screw over this buyer. And because I even showed documentation going back 30 days. I'm like, I talked to the vice president of the company and said, I'm documenting everything. He's like, sue us. It's like, are you kidding me? And our buyer lost that house because we couldn't close on Monday. I could have closed on Wednesday. It was insane. And yeah. You know, I was even seeking, I called, it was down in the Orlando area. I was calling news agencies and everything. I was just trying to make a big deal out of this because it was just a shitty situation.
Yeah. Abraham, you asked, what would be the reason to get an FHA if the person has high credit score? Two common reasons. The first one would be if you're looking at doing kind of like a house hacking thing where you maybe buy a multifamily home, you live in one unit and rent out the others. You can do this with a 2-4 unit home and take advantage of a low down payment on FHA. The other option would be, or not option, the other circumstance that would be most common is if you had a high debt to income ratio, because FHA will allow a higher debt to income ratio than conventional loan would. So outside of that, I'm trying to think any other instances. Those are the two I can think from the top of my head that would be most common.
Yeah, you're dead on those. Yep, that's about it.
Let's see. It's a lot of people in here answering each other's questions. That's awesome. How many lenders at minimum would you recommend talking to when shopping around? So we do kind of an interesting thing as a broker. So you can somewhere up here. Oh, it's so hard.
This is awesome. I hate this.
It's so weird. Can I take this one?
And let's try to do this next week, if that's okay. What we are is we're actually a federally chartered bank, but we are also a broker, and we're a huge broker. We're set up with, and I know I sound like a broken record, this isn't meant to be a sales pitch, but I want to answer the question. We can scan your loan to over 85 different lenders. So we ask people, you know, on our consultations, we even request, you know, if you already got pre-approved, send us your loan estimate. Next week, what we'll do is we'll go through how we do things. So we have a system that we plug in your data and it gives you what our bank's rates are. And then what it's going to show is it's going to show us rates all over the country. and on banks, lenders, mortgage companies, everything. We have the ability to use 80, 85, 87 of those lenders. Yeah. And you probably know almost all of them. And that's so basically we can do your shopping for you.
Yeah. Is that, I think sometimes what, I know at least I forget to mention when we talk about, you know, working as a broker is it's not like all these just like small unknown companies. Like we work with Loan Depot, Rocket. Gosh, I'm blanking.
I really didn't even pay attention to a lot of them, but there's tons of them.
Caliber, all of these companies. And what's interesting is when you work as a broker, it basically allows us to separate the costs from the company. So instead of these bigger companies, when they do have their own in-house loan officers, they're also absorbing the cost of all of the marketing that comes with them, the training that comes with them, the licensing that comes with hiring an individual, and that gets passed on to you in a higher interest rate. Working as a broker, us being separate where we just use the money from that company for the loan rather than needing them for marketing costs. This is what we do for marketing. Like we have YouTube. We don't go and buy like Super Bowl ads, which maybe we should start doing, Dan. I think it might be a little bit out of our budget. But because of that, we're able to pass on a lower rate even while using money from a bigger company. So some of these bigger companies that here that have commercials, we can still work with them and have your loan with them, but offer you a better rate because we're cutting out the cost that they would have paid for an employee and all of the other marketing costs that they need to bring in that business. That's why, you know, companies, these huge mortgage lenders will pay for things like Super Bowl ads, but then, you know, they need a way to bring in people into their company. But then you think about who's paying for the Super Bowl ad. Okay, well, the company is, but they make money through your interest rate. We don't have these crazy costs. The way that we work with clients is through YouTube. And so basically instead of paying money for, you know, marketing and whatever, I just, you know, Dan and I spend a bunch of time making videos. And so we're able to pass on that lower cost to you.
We need a couple more and call it a night. Yes. I started at 8 o'clock in the morning and I've had probably 16 consultations and I am tired.
Yes, let's do it. Trying to cash out my rehab home, $200,000 needed considering the Fed's plan in just the next couple of years to reset. Do you recommend I get a HELOC? What is the Fed's plan to reset? I don't know what that means. What is, reset what?
I see a lot of YouTube videos saying, you know, Fed reset or something reset. I don't know. I mean, maybe I think what he might say is rates coming down. HELOCs are a great way to go. The only thing that scares me on HELOCs is the adjustable rate features on things. And, but if you're locked in at a 2.5% rate and you need 10 or 15 grand to fix up a house, yeah, look into a HELOC. Actually, we got, I don't know, when did I text you? Last week, we had a HELOC submitted, approved, and cleared to close in 5 hours. I kid you not. It was crazy. So we even offer some HELOC loans. We don't specialize in it really. So if you just want a HELOC second mortgage, you're looking for a $20,000 line of credit, call the bank that you have your checking and savings with. They'll probably do it for you and they'll probably do it for free.
Yeah. X-Links, is there a benefit to going with a lender who isn't going to resell your loan, keep the loan on their books? Like Drew mentioned, 99.9% are going to sell your loan. And that's kind of what Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are, or why their guidelines are standardized, is because loans get sold. And this may be a hot take, but lenders who sell your loan are going to offer you a better interest rate than lenders who keep a loan on their books most of the time. Because the whole point of selling a loan is the fact that, let's say Dan and I were like, we had a ton of money and we were lenders. We didn't work for a lender. We were a lender. And let's say collectively we had $1 million and we said, we're going to lend it out. We could only lend money to like 3 people, right? Because as soon as somebody comes in with, they want a $300,000 loan and Dan and I say, great, here's $300,000. Now we only have $700,000 left. So another person comes in, they want $300,000. Another person, now we have no money. Oh, we're out of business as a lender. right?
Right.
But the reason selling loans happens is because, let's say we then worked with a client and we gave them $300,000 for their loan. Then by being able to sell that somewhere else, we now have more money that we can lend out. And that's why lenders sell loans. It helps the flow of money so they can lend more, have better products, and often have lower rates. And so I just don't see any benefit of like going with a company that doesn't sell, because nothing happens to your mortgage. You have the same terms. Everything is exactly the same. The only thing is who you're paying the money to. And
ultimately, really, they would be deceiving you if they came out and said, we will not sell your mortgage. Well, let's say they go out of business. The mortgage is going to transfer to another company. You know, so every loan can be sold, can be transferred. So you probably got that information from the bank saying, we hold all our paper. You can come in and make payments. But don't be surprised if 6 months after you do that loan, you're paying another entity because they sold off your mortgage. Just let you know. So don't pay a higher rate and more closing costs just to be at your local bank, because most likely that loan, you know, I can almost assure you 5 years from now, that bank's not going to be holding that note.
Joey said, are some non-QM options for investors actually lower, better rates than conventional? No, non-QM often has much higher rates. They can work in other situations where like a conventional loan wouldn't work, but you will pay for it with a higher interest rate. I'm not sure if you saw the comments, Dan, when we were talking about title stuff, I was asking about an attorney opinion letter. There are some lenders I've seen who will close a mortgage without a title search or without title insurance. And they'll just use an attorney's opinion of the chain of title. And so I was asking Cassidy,
Okay. I mean, I honestly, on my computer, I have access to a lot of the data that the title companies have. I still wouldn't, you know, put a letter out there because I just might've missed something. So when you're doing that, what you risk is, as a lender, what we risk is there's a lien or some back taxes on there that, you know, we didn't know about. Is you, the buyer, let's just say you got a broke or an attorney opinion. Well, that attorney's probably not going to pay a policy or a claim if this happens. Let's say you buy that house and a year down the road, some guy knocks on your door and says, hey, how do you like your roof? Oh, I love it. Well, I put it on there last year and you never paid me. Well, I didn't live here. I don't care. It's on this house. I want my money. Well, that broker opinion or that attorney opinion letter isn't going to do you any good. Somebody's going to have to pay that contractor, and that's going to raise a problem.
Yeah. And like, you know, Cassie was saying, it's like a kind of pitched to low income or minority families. And it's not a protection to the buyer. Like, you know, Drew mentioned too, like lenders accept the risk of foreclosure and they're more protected than the buyer. I think sometimes what maybe people don't realize is that, you know, if I go to the store and I buy something, I get a receipt for it. And like, here, it's a one-to-one thing. I have the thing, I have the receipt. If there was an issue with it, here's the receipt, here's the thing, and I can give it back and get my money back. With a house, just because you signed to purchase the house doesn't mean that it's yours in all instances legally. Because like Dan mentioned, somebody could have a claim to the ownership of the house. There, you could have bought it from a seller who had maybe a estate gets contested. There's all these things that can happen that impact your ownership of the home. And you can't just be like, look, I have a purchase contract, so I own the home free and clear. If there was an issue in the chain of title beforehand, somebody could have legal ownership to a home. In those instances, that will turn into a lawsuit that's going to cost a lot of money. And the whole point of having the insurance claim is so that if that ever comes up, which it does, not for everybody, but for a good amount of people who don't have tens of thousands of dollars to pay out an equity claim, insurance comes in to be able to say, there's no way that we can resolve this without taking this to court. It's going to be a long battle and there's a chance that we won't win. Here's the money to pay off the person who has claim to the house. So that's the whole reason why it exists, is you have title defects where it isn't just, here's the receipt for the house, so I own it. It often is, well, I also have a receipt for the house. And then that other person has a receipt for the house. And now you're battling to see whose receipt is the most correct about it. And that's where a chain of title comes in. That's where a title search comes in. And actually having insurance to say, you know what? If the paperwork is showing things that we're going to contest, here's a payout to everybody to make sure everybody's happy and we don't actually have to have litigation about this and potentially lose ownership of the house. So thank you everyone for being here. It is about time to wrap up.
I'm going to probably go have dinner.
Yeah, Dan should probably eat at some point today. I'm going to go like hack up my lungs, I think, at some point. Thank you all for being here. I know that we didn't answer everybody's question. As every live stream, it's impossible for us to do so. But there's so many ways that you can still get your question answered. We do this live stream every week at 8 Eastern on Wednesdays. So you can join us next week. You can also email me. My email is in the description. You can also schedule a call with one of our mortgage advisors. We're licensed in all 50 states. We'd love to see where you're at and how we can help you. You can go to winthehouseyoulove.com up here and schedule a call with us. You'll get a call from Dan or Pat. Patrick is on this week. And then I think Alan's coming back soon, a couple days.
He'll be coming back on Saturday, so he'll be back live on Monday.
Sweet. And then also go follow Dan's channel, Dan Frio, The Rate Update. He puts out videos almost every single day. Thank you so much for being here. Again, if you have questions, please reach out to us. We'd love to help you. But other than that, enjoy the beginning of this new year. Hopefully you didn't commit to going to the gym because that doesn't sound like fun. And if that's the case, I'm so sorry that you're going to put yourself through that for the next 2 weeks and then hopefully not stop.
It's flexing my muscles.
Alrighty, we will see you all next week.
Take care, folks. Thanks.